This is the Waters and Harvey Show. I'm Darren Waters.
And I'm Marcus Harvey.
Building and strengthening our communities is a topic of great importance to many, but just how do we achieve this? Today on the Waters and Harvey Show, we want to explore the work that CoThink, a local philanthropic organization and giving circle, is doing to improve economic upward mobility of the members of the African American and Latinx communities in Asheville. We'll be back in a moment. Again, this is the Waters and Harvey Show. I'm Darren Waters, and as always, glad to have you all join us in the audience. And as usual, I'm very happy, very pleased not to be here alone, but to be here with my brother, Dr. Marcus Harvey.
Thrilled to be here, brother. How are you?
Brother, I'm doing okay. How's it going on your end of the world?
Busy, but I think I'm maintaining.
Are in this case, your end of the table.
Right. Busy, but I'm maintaining in one somehow.
So, Marcus, we're back here in the studio again. We're going to have a conversation about something that you and I have been talking about a lot. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this issue of community building, how we go about building a sense of community. This is our continued exploration into ways that local groups and organizations are working to actually strengthen their communities. And this is something that's important to a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And I'm reminded of an essay that I recently read for class by a well-known Ghanaian philosopher, Kwame Jeche, who wrote an essay entitled Person and Community in African Thought. Mm-hmm. And he makes the point that from the perspective of the Akan, this is a major ethnic group in Ghana, personhood makes no sense within the outside of the context of community. In fact, it is the community that constitutes the person. Mm-hmm. And the meanings, right, that the person is able to encounter, because meaning is something that is also constructed within the context of community. Right. So this idea of what it means to be a person and what it means to be a person within the context of community, of meaningful community, is a central idea in many African contexts.
Man, brother, that's a good way to put that. And it brings to mind, you know, and I think that this is kind of food for thought. Another quote that I once heard about someone talking about community, it was once said that community is much more than belonging to something. Mm. It's about doing something together that makes belonging matter. Mm. And we've talked to a number of people. Our listeners will remember that we've talked to a number of people who have heard us have this conversation about people in the local community here and how community once functioned in a way that I think that some people will argue is different from the way that it is functioning today. We've used this African proverb as well that it takes a village, that it is a group effort to kind of bring us all along, you know. So, you know, to hear you refer back to those African traditions again, brother, I think is very fitting.
Yeah, and you know, I think you know it's more helpful to think of community as a kind of organism, a living, vibrant, dynamic organism, as opposed to this sort of static thing to which we belong. Because community is always evolving, it's always changing, it's always adapting, it's always finding new ways to help people connect to the world in which they live. Right. So community is a living, active, dynamic thing.
Right. Yeah. Brother, I know one thing we could throw in the middle of this kind of discussion that you and I are having here, but I won't do it. I'll just bring it up. Anyway, you know, we've talked about the influence of capitalism on our thinking and how it has kind of detached us from each other. Some people will know that I reference Alexis de Tocqueville a lot. Mm-hmm. This is a criticism that he had of the United States in his book, Democracy in America. And I think that Alexis de Tocqueville was on to something.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one. I mean, later we see a social critic, E.F. Schumacher, who argues that that modern society in the Western world suffers from what he calls a metaphysical disease that is connected to this sort of this fixation with capitalism and so forth and so on. So de Tocqueville isn't the only one who had a very specific diagnosis.
So we're going to start throwing out all of these other names of people who have been dealing with this issue of community. And, you know, we use this quote, you know, you talk about the Akan, we talk about this African proverb that it takes a village. village and talking about community being much more than just belonging to something, but about doing something together that makes belonging matter. I really believe, Marcus, that when we think about it, the work that our guest today, who we'll be talking to in a few minutes here, Miss Tracy Green Washington, the work that she is doing through the local philanthropic organization CoThink comports magnificently with this idea. And so Marcus and I are going to step out for just a second, and we'll be back in a minute with Miss Tracy Green Washington. Again, this is the Waters and Harvey Show, and I know, Marcus, I think I speak for both of us when I say we're glad that you all are joining us again here on the show as we talk about community. What does it mean to be in community? What are people doing to actually help support and strengthen and build our communities? And Marcus and I are so glad and happy, and we're honored, as we are when guests come in to talk with us about these topics. We're very honored to have as our guest today Miss Tracy Green Washington, who is a native of Asheville and knows the Asheville community very well. You know, in addition to being the founder of CoThink, which she'll talk about in just a few minutes, she is also the director of special initiatives at the Kate B. Reynolds Charitable Trust in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. But Tracy, we're so glad to have you here. So welcome to the show.
Yes, thank welcome, you for joining Tracy.
Us. Thank you. I'm excited to be here and talk about community and the work that's happening here in Asheville.
All right. Thank you. And, you know, Tracy, we've already alluded to the fact that this is your home, native to Asheville in Western North Carolina. Didn't go a lot into your background because we like to give the guests a chance to kind of tell us a little bit about themselves and introduce themselves to the audience. So I think that's where I would like to start in this conversation. Can you just tell us a little bit more about your background and your connection to Asheville in Western North Carolina?
It's interesting that you started the show really talking about community. Community is all of those things that you guys talked about, and it's also this grounding of context of who you are and who you emerge into and who you evolve into as a person. For myself, I'm a native of Asheville. I'm a child of Western North Carolina, a predominantly African-American community that has really been impacted by a number of different challenges, but also has been a birthplace of a number of opportunities and assets and communities. And so when I think about my connection to Western North Carolina, I cannot talk about that connection without talking about the West, but I can't talk about it without talking about Elder Hayes.
All right.
When I talk about my work and how I am using this platform and talking about social justice work, it started with Elder Hayes and really knowing how to do door knocking and organizing work through the NAACP. And so when you talk about community, it's not just place, it's the people. Right. And so when you talk about Elder Hayes and you talk about other leaders in the community, when you talk about the essence of who they are, that is who I am when you talk about Western North Carolina and this work.
Well, Tracy, you know, I have to jump back in here. You know, I'm kind of butting in on my brother's time here for a minute, but he's given me permission to do that. I do have to say this. Now, you said born and raised here in Asheville. You are native of this region of Western North Carolina. Now, look, you know, I am too. But I was always told that there are no African Americans in this region of the state. Now, now, what gives here?
It definitely is a false narrative. I think these narratives that we create about this part of the state is actually a detriment to what is really happening and the power of collective impact and collective wisdom and assets and talents that are here. Western North Carolina, in particular Asheville, is home to a plethora of black and brown folks that are doing some extraordinary work. The challenge is because we have this narrative that continues to be perpetuated, folks are invisible. And so this invisibility creates the opportunity for folks in society to create a different type of dialogue around what communities are capable of what communities are doing, and the power and space and collective work that is happening in this part of the state.
And I think, Tracy, that's a beautiful segue into a conversation about your organization, CoThink. Let's talk about that. When did you found CoThink? Why did you found it? What motivated, what energized you to create this very important organization?
I want to start out, even though I'm listed as a founder, CoThink is a we. It is a collection of a lot of different people that are supporting and moving this work forward. And it really birthed out of this this identification that there was a lot of really creative work that was bubbling up in Western North Carolina from communities of color. But because they weren't able to access resources, because they didn't have a platform that gave them visibility, they weren't being identified as the change agents in this community that were really doing progressive work. One of the things that I noted in my role as a program officer for a statewide foundation is that I could not support their work, nor could the local community foundation support their work, because it just wasn't aligned with their mission or how things were aligned, situated in that way. And so how do we create a mechanism where we support some of the most innovative work that was emerging from the community? And so that is where CoThink emerged from. The National Center for Responsive Philanthropy did a study a number of years ago, and it talked about the return on investment in philanthropy. And that return on investment is coming from these kind of loose networks and bodies of work that are growing out of grassroots movements and grassroots organizations. That's what I'm seeing here in Asheville.
Right.
And that really created the platform for us to be able to create CoThink.
Right. And we want to go into a little bit more detail about the particulars of CoThink. But Tracy, as I'm listening to you, I wonder, the question that kind of pops up into my mind and I think about here is, how did leaving Western North Carolina kind of give you a unique perspective and help you to be able to really see some of these things that were going on the ground? Because I find that people who have had the opportunity, you know, we grow up in the space, but then when you leave a space that you've grown up in, you can kind of look at it through a different lens, and you're able to see things that you might not have seen being on the ground. So is it fair to say that may have influenced the things that you're able to see now and what you're bringing to the table? Does that make sense?
It does. I don't think it necessarily influenced what I see. It's about what I can do about it.
Okay.
So having been a child of this work, working with NAACP, being conscious of these issues that are happening in community, being conscious of the fact that there aren't a lot of people of color in these leadership positions, and conscious of the fact that folks don't come downtown, and conscious of the fact that you don't see the presence of diversity in these spaces, really is something that was cultivated at a very young age. What happened in terms of me leaving Western North Carolina was I was able to have access to these other networks and other opportunities that then allowed me to come home. So the ability to come home is very powerful.
Right.
And sometimes folks don't take that proposition to come home. And, you know, in our reality, sometimes there's not the space to come home. I'm grateful that community allowed the space for me to come home. I'm grateful that the proposition of what CoThink could be and how it could support community was well received by the community and embraced and actually amplified and leveraged in a way that is producing, I think, some really phenomenal connections, collaborations, capacity building, and some outcomes long term.
Right. Yeah. And Tracy, what are some of the specific projects right now that CoThink is focused on? Especially, you know, I'm thinking about everything that's going on right now, all of the social ferment in the country. What are some focal points for the organization right now?
One of the key things that we focus on is connecting folks to resources.
Okay.
One of the big things that we identified as a priority for us is to have alliance building and collaboration as a priority and a thing for us throughout the year. This really came on the cusp of a lot of work last year around some tipping point grants and being able to connect individuals within the community with access to access resources from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And I also identified that there were clear gaps in terms of people being intimidated by the process of philanthropy and really figuring out how we take the mystique out of philanthropy and really make that as an accessible tool to folks. And also noting that a lot of people were doing work in the same space but weren't connected, weren't talking to each other because maybe they didn't know about each other's work. There were issues where things weren't healed up in community relative to them wanting to be connected to one another, or whether they just didn't feel as if there was enough space for all of the work to work together and to be able to have visibility and serve as in a leadership role as well. And so all of those things working together really was the impetus for it.
Now, Tracy, you just made a really interesting point about people being intimidated by philanthropy. Can you speak to that a little bit more, please?
Yeah. You know, philanthropy, the definition is a love of man. But when you look at the structural mechanisms that facilitate philanthropy, they can be very intimidating and they can be very white. mm-hmm. just to be plain.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when you don't see yourself on the other side of philanthropy, it can be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And when you have structures that you're unfamiliar with navigating and relationships and language that's not familiar to you, then you have a tendency to not engage in those activities.
Right.
The work and the kind of process that we've created through CodeThink has been about breaking that down. We have a whole process where we break down an application, move folks through each part of it, and at the end of it, have some type of application that they're ready to
mm-hmm.
submit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's learning that's happening both for the participant in the program, but it's also learning that happens for our peers that's a part of the CodeThink Collaborative, for them to own and have their own relationship with these funding entities
right.
in a way that they didn't feel comfortable before.
Right, right. Marcus, that was a brilliant question that you raised, because I was thinking along the same lines that applying for grants and being involved in the philanthropic process, especially as someone who hopes to be a recipient, to me, it's a daunting process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have talked about this, and even in our own academic work of applying for fellowships or mm-hmm. money to support some of the research that we do is very difficult. We've even had a conversation recently, Tracy, among the two of us about even being nominated for awards and the amount of work that we have to do just to accept the nominations, and then becoming just daunting and to the point that you just kind of throw up your hands and
right.
say, I can't do this. So I think that it is brilliant that you are using the expertise that you have developed in the fields that you are in to help people work through this process. Now, one thing that I'd like to talk about a little bit here to give you an opportunity, because I like the fact that you've used the word we, that this is an effort together, a group of people working together. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the people who are involved in the project with you?
I think one of the things to emphasize about CodeThink is that it is a collaboration between African American and Latinx leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that it's Black and brown folks that's coming together and pooling their collective time, talent, and treasure to address some of the most vexing social issues facing our community, those are the people that are showing up at the table. But not only is it those people, we also have white allies at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And these are folks that have decided that they will no longer be complicit in participating in systems that continue to perpetuate inequities.
Mm-hmm.
But also many of them have participated in racial equity training.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you participate in racial equity training doesn't mean you know how to do racial equity work.
Right.
And so what's really beautiful about the work that we do collectively, it creates these safe spaces for people to have really hard, complex conversations, and at the same time practice what they have gotten in the classroom around mm-hmm. racial equity in a place that's non-judgmental, that's about support, but also about that we need all of us to be able to do this work collectively.
Right.
So you see this kind of tug and tension mm-hmm. that happens, but it's in a very, I think, positive, disruptive mm-hmm. way towards change.
Right.
And so you have leaders that you've had on this show that are part of it,
mm-hmm.
from Stephanie to Darcel to Sekou Coleman to,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all these different leaders, to Carolina McGrady, to I can go on and on, that are engaged in this work and have
right.
contributed resources to it.
It's fantastic that you're doing
it
this
is.
Because as a historian, you know, I know that even getting people to sit down around the table and have honest conversations,
I was thinking the same thing.
about yeah. our narrative,
yeah.
the
yeah.
historical narrative,
yeah.
who has been led, it becomes very difficult. And one thing that emerges in my work a lot, Tracy, and I'm looking at the late 19th century and looking at philanthropic efforts in this particular part of history, and I know that there's a lot of paternalism. The word paternalism
mm-hmm.
emerges here, a lot of paternalism
mm-hmm.
that emerges in that, and that can be just as devastating as just out-and-out racist activity sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds to me like you all have found a unique way to even deal with the whole paternalistic
mm-hmm.
ethos that
mm-hmm.
can develop in these type of relationships. Does that make sense?
That does make mm-hmm. sense, and we've worked very hard at it. It's definitely been a challenge in terms of us being honest with one another. One of the very first things that we did was focus on healing, and that's something that's a constant theme throughout our work. We broke bread together. We talked about the issues, and people cried. And one of the things that we make sure when people come to the table, that they can come to the table as themselves in the language that they want to speak, using the cultural expressions that they are most comfortable with, and be able to have these really hard conversations. And we jokingly tell people, you know, don't leave, get a piece of cake.
Right. Okay. Marcus, I have to say here, brother, you know, this sounds a lot like the racial reconciliation efforts in South Africa.
It does.
After the fall of apartheid, I mean, which is something that we never did here. And Tracy, I'm sitting here wondering, can you take this model and make it national? How can we do, you know, so that we can have a national conversation that is like this?
But, yeah. It's definitely taking hold. One of the things that I will say that was important beyond the discussion is that we made an intentional covenant between one another of how we would act with each other, how we would behave with each other, how we would not participate in collaborations that didn't include black and brown folks, how we wouldn't allow our relatives to say or disparaging things against each of our communities. And we have stayed to that covenant. That is what binds us.
Right.
This is important. Can you talk a little bit about the awards program, Tracy, and perhaps about you know, some of this year's recipients?
Yeah, you get
so
me
forth?
Excited. Today.
Can I interject here? You know, to promote work that, you know, Marcus and I both are kind of involved in, aside from the show itself, but the African Americans in Western North Carolina Conference at the university, which we're going into the fourth annual one this October.
And we're partnering together.
Happy to be working with you, Tracy, on this. So let's talk about that.
Yes, we're real excited about it. So one of the things that we know about communities of color, we don't have the opportunity to honor the folks who are doing the hard work. And so one of the first things we did last year was develop the Leadership and Ally Awards. And it was an opportunity to highlight and acknowledge leaders that were doing the heavy lifting in community, but they wasn't always the ones who got the accolades. And so last year we had the opportunity to honor four leaders of color that included Tamiko and other folks from the community, as well as allies like Amy Worthen and others.
Right.
And this year we have the same opportunity. We have another like slate of just really bang up leaders who are doing really heavy lifting work in a community that no one else can do. And today is actually the last day for people to vote.
Okay.
One of the things that's very unique about our process is that all the nominations come from community, and community has 50% of the vote, and we use this platform called Tallyspace.
Okay.
Tallyspace is in some ways a community organizing tool for us to get people engaged, excited, and involved in a process that they normally don't get an opportunity to be involved in.
Okay.
And the other 50% comes from the co-think team coming together and weighing all of the results as well.
So you're going to be giving away some money this time around.
Yes.
Right? You know, is it okay for us to ask, you know, how much are you, because am I correct in saying this, Tracy, that this has grown over since you helped found this organization? Your ability to give more in awards has grown. Where are you this year?
So let me just step back and say really quickly, last year was the first year we gave out grants. We've only been around 2.5 years, so we're still a baby. So we gave around $4,500 in grants and also promised community supports to our recipients. This year we have the opportunity to give away $26,000 in grants to 8 community organizations. And we also have set aside an additional $4,000, I think it's $4,000, as a part of an innovation fund that we're doing as a part of a leadership series that we're going to be piloting as well.
Right.
One of the things that we have noted is that for folks to be in strong alliance and collaboration, we have to do our own work. And so we want to support people to be able to do it and also have resources that can help facilitate that after they've finished the leadership series as well.
Okay.
So that's the big jump.
Yeah. Tracy, what does CoThink's future look like in your opinion? And along with that, how can others who currently may not know about CoThink or who want to be involved in CoThink get involved in CoThink?
The beautiful thing about CoThink, it is adaptive, it is evolving, it is reaching and working where community is. So I don't know what CoThink will evolve into. What I know that it is evolving into is a resource for community, a place to build capacity, a place that's creating a platform for people to get skills that they needed. It's also changing a lot of the institutional practices that are happening here in community. And it's showing up as a movement where people are demanding that the way that we do our work in CoThink be embedded in other areas and practices within the Asheville and Western North Carolina community.
You know, Tracy, well, I'm hearing another thing here. I recently read an article from the New York Times that was talking about a community-based project in San Francisco that that was developed among the people within that community themselves, giving them the opportunity to find solutions rather than being told by bureaucrats what the solutions should be or what the programs they should be involved in. And it sounds to me that this is exactly what CoTINK is. It's helping to support initiatives that people are taking on themselves, right? They're developing their own answers, looking for their own answers to some of the challenges or problems that they face. Does that make sense?
It is. And it also is allowing them the dignity to not have to ask for permission to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things that in terms of helping and supporting CoTINK, we have a big meeting event that's coming out on October 21st. The theme of our annual event is Becoming We, and really about and continue to seed and support the infrastructure of communities of color here in Western North Carolina. We're partnering with you guys on that, which is really exciting. We're giving away awards. So we would love more folks to be engaged with CoTINK as members, as supporters, as sponsors. We're also beginning to get invitations from folks to actually come out and figure out how they actually import different components of CoTINK into their work. And we've been providing support and technical assistance and consulting services to those folks as well.
All right. Well, Tracy, one of the last things I would say, it sounds to me that this is an opportunity for other people to get involved, right? And so we're glad that we could be a part of helping to bring the message to a larger audience here in this region of our state, and hope that people will take the time to look you up. Now, could you tell us, you have a website, too, and where can people find more information about the CoTINK project?
If they go to CoTINK.org, and CoTINK is CoTINKK.org, they can read all about CoTINK. They can see how they can get involved, have to be sponsors, and they can also learn more about our October 21st annual event as well.
And well, we're looking forward to it. October 21st will be a part of the African Americans in Western North Carolina Conference this year, which is October 19th, 20th, and the 21st. We'll end with the CoTINK project, and I'm glad that we are partnering with you all, Tracy. Tracy, I'm so glad that you were willing to come back up and have this conversation with us today.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
So happy that Marcus and I could be involved. And Marcus and I will be back in just a moment. Well, again, this is the Waters and Harvey Show, and I'm Darren Waters, along with my brother, Dr. Marcus Harvey. We've just had a very rich, very powerful conversation with Ms. Tracy Green Washington, talking about the CoTINK Giving Circle, this philanthropic project. Man, brother, rich conversation. Rich,
yeah, and 2 points quickly that really stand out to me had to do with the fact that CoTINK is interested in providing a space to have important but difficult, messy conversations around race, around inequity, around injustice, and topics of that nature. And it's so important because spaces where these kinds of conversations occur, unfortunately, are rather sparse.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, I think another important point that was made was the fact that this country's philanthropic culture, the structures that constitute it, were not built with marginal communities in mind.
You're right.
And I think CoTINK is addressing that problem as well.
Brother, well, again, you have wrapped it up very well. And I appreciate that. I will say again, you're becoming masterful. Sorry. Make it easy for me. But once again, thank you all for joining us in the audience. And Marcus and I want to remind you again that the Waters and Harvest Show is produced at Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, North Carolina.
And you can listen to our podcast on BPR.org, on the BPR mobile app, and on iTunes and Google Play.
Follow us and get in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.